From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. President Donald Trump has signed an executive order creating a White House task force on missing and killed American Indians and Alaska Natives. The task force will be overseen by Attorney General William Barr and Interior Secretary David Bernhardt. It's tasked with developing protocols to apply to new and unsolved cases and creating a multi-jurisdictional team to review cold cases. Trump today called the scourge of violence facing Native American women and girls sobering and heartbreaking. National Institute of Justice estimates that 1.5 million Native American women have experienced violence in their lifetime, including many who are victims of sexual violence. On some reservations, federal studies have shown women are killed at a rate over 10 times the national average. The administration of Governor Mike Dunleavy has settled a lawsuit seeking to have the Alaska Hire Law declared unconstitutional. Michael Garrity is the attorney for Colaska, the company that filed the lawsuit. He says the state will pay the company interest and other costs related to past citations against the company. Those citations no longer exist.
They were dismissed as part of the settlement.
The state agreed to pay Colaska $50,000. Garrity says each side will pay its own legal fees. The settlement comes less than 2 months after Attorney General Kevin Clarkson issued a legal opinion that the law is unconstitutional. The law requires private contractors working on state-funded projects to hire qualified Alaskans as a percentage of their workers. Clarkson said in October that Dunleavy encourages hiring Alaskans for jobs in the state, but he said the federal and state constitutions prohibit laws mandating hiring Alaskans in preference over others. He cited previous court decisions against earlier versions of the law. Anchorage Senator Bill Willikowski is disappointed with the settlement. He's concerned that the state will no longer enforce the Alaska Hire Law.
Shocking and disappointing. This is a law that's been on the books for over 30 years. It's been a law that probably six or eight different governors have followed and probably eight or 10 different attorney generals have followed, Republicans and Democrats and independents.
Willikowski is a Democrat. Dunleavy is a Republican. Willikowski says the legislature should hold hearings on whether the administration is following the law.
The legislature has the right at any time to go ahead and urge the governor to reconsider his position. And if he refuses to do that, then ultimately the legislature could bring a lawsuit and compel the enforcement of the law.
A spokesperson for Dunleavy referred questions to the Department of Law. A spokesperson for the department said in a written statement, like any settlement, this represents a negotiated compromise on both sides. An official with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says the agency is not under pressure from anyone to deliver a certain time a final environmental review on the proposed Pebble Mine project. Sheila Newman, Deputy Chief of the Corps' Regulatory Division in Alaska, says the Corps is working through its process and determining whether it needs to revise its schedule. She says a decision on that could come by mid-December. The existing schedule targets early 2020 for release of a final environmental review. Critics of the proposed copper and gold mine in southwest Alaska's Bristol Bay region argue the Corps' draft analysis is scientifically inadequate. Newman told reporters today the Corps received a lot of in-depth resources and thoughtful comments from public and agencies to refine its analysis. Oil company Hilcorp and one of its drilling contractors each paid more than $25,000 in penalties after a worker was killed last December on one of Hilcorp's rigs on the North Slope. 36-year-old Sean Huber died at the Milne Point field when the rig's operator accidentally opened a set of hydraulic jaws and dropped a 700-pound section of drilling pike that struck Huber in the head. That's according to the company's internal investigation that was submitted to state workplace safety regulators. Some 6 months later, Hilcorp paid $25,000 in state-assessed fines for violating a pair of safety regulations. One says employers shouldn't allow rig workers to sand or pass under suspended loads, and another requires appropriate disinfectant to be used after a blood spill. A Hilcorp supervisor told rig workers to clean up after the accident, and some of them weren't wearing gloves, exposing them to bloodborne illnesses. The company's internal investigation found that there were contradictory safety requirements on the rig when it came to workers' exposure to overhead hazards, and it also found that when the rig's operator accidentally dropped the pipe, he was distracted because he was mentoring a colleague. Deb Kelly is a former top official with a state agency that regulates workplace safety. She says the ultimate responsibility for the accident lies with the companies, not the rig operator who unintentionally dropped the pipe.
An employer should never put employees in a position where a moment's inattention will cause a fatality. You have to have as many layers of safety as you can practically apply so that a lot of things have to go wrong before someone gets hurt.
Hillcorp, in a prepared statement, says Huber's death was a tragic event and that they've worked closely with state regulators to see how they can apply lessons learned. A month of near-constant downpours has finally lifted the Ketchikan area out of drought after more than a year. But as Eric Stone reports from Alaska's Energy Desk, getting all that rain all at once presents an entirely new set of problems.
As recently as early October, the Ketchikan area was in extreme drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. That's especially tough for a community that gets nearly all of its power from hydroelectric dams. With lake levels too low to support power generation, Ketchikan had to turn to backup diesel generators. Ketchikan's electric utility even had to rent an additional 4 diesel generators to keep up with demand. Electricity prices spiked as the utility passed the increased cost of diesel generation onto consumers. But then came November. The National Weather Service says Ketchikan has gotten more than 21 inches of rain in November. And the fact that the rain came so quickly presents its own challenges.
We filed into the parking lot around 8 o'clock, and we noticed that the creek was pretty high and flowing pretty hard.
That's Ketchikan Public Utilities electric manager Andy Donato. It's his job to keep an eye on the dams that generate much of Ketchikan's electricity. If the lakes get too high, that's a problem.
So if the lake is allowed to get up high enough and overflows the earthen dam portion, well, then there's reason for erosion.
And if the dam starts to erode, that could have catastrophic consequences. That could mean anything from uncontrolled dam releases to a total collapse, violently flooding everyone downstream of the dam. Earlier this month, heavy rains raised water levels above the spillway at Ketchikan Lakes. That triggered emergency response protocols.
We had a lot of mobilization to do. We had a lot of notifications to make. And basically, the community got ready for a bigger disaster.
This rapid swing from abnormally dry weather to very wet weather could be a sign of things to come, says Brian Brettschneider, a climate scientist at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Though most people think of climate change simply in terms of rising temperatures, Brettschneider says that's only one part of it. For Southeast Alaska, climate change will likely mean wetter weather, more rain. But while Ketchikan and the rest of Southeast might get wetter, Brettschneider says paradoxically, droughts could become more common as well. It all comes back to rising temperatures.
Because of warmer temperatures, when it doesn't rain, there'll be more drying of the land and of the environment. So when it doesn't rain, when we do have dry spells, they'll generally be, we think they'll be more severe.
In Ketchikan, though, businesses along the very same creek that nearly flooded earlier this month say they're not terribly worried about a future that could include more rapid weather swings and potentially more flooding.
It isn't really something I think about.
Grace Freeman helps run the Soho Coho Art Gallery on the town's popular Creek Street boardwalk. She says that creekside businesses will find ways to adapt.
Hopefully we'll figure out a way to do it. I mean, all the buildings are on pilings, so there is a way that we can raise them.
Back at Ketchikan Public Utilities, Donato says he's just glad to see the rains return after the 16-month drought.
You couldn't ask for a better situation than what we have right now. We're basically chock-a-block full on all our reservoirs going into December. And that's exactly what you hope for.
He says November's rain means the utility will finally be able to return the last of its rented diesel generators. That'll lower and eventually eliminate the diesel surcharge on locals' electricity bills in the months to come. But Donato and others throughout Southeast may have a tough road ahead. These rain-dependent communities will have to figure out how to adapt to a climate that might look very different than the dam builders planned for. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Eric Stone in Ketchikan.
And Alaska City faces millions of dollars in repair or replacement costs due to a rotting floor in a public building. KYUK reports officials in Bethel must decide on the method and possible costs to address the water-damaged floor in the city's Public Works Department building. Acting City Manager Bill Howell says there are rotten beams as well as detached girders and brackets in the building constructed in the early 1980s. Howell says parking water trucks in the building allowed water to penetrate areas. Howell says options include a $1 million to $1.5 million floor replacement with the possibility of wall repairs of $5 to $6 million. Bethel could also replace the building for about $30 million. City Council has approved $150,000 for damage assessment and emergency repairs. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute announced today that it's releasing 3 new children's books, including its first trilingual one. I filed the story. Cradle Songs of Southeast Alaska features lullabies in the languages of three Southeast Alaska indigenous groups, the Tlingit language of the Tlingit, the Haudkil language of the Haida, and the Somaliyak language of the Tsimshian. There are three songs in each language, each accompanied with English translations. They're sung or performed in spoken word in a companion CD. In a press release, SHI President Rosita Worrell says the lullabies and the book's illustrations will introduce children to their culture, land, and environment. Worrell also says that sharing songs in this way is unusual. The nine songs in this book and CD are either public domain or original works. Other songs with clan or family ties usually are not for public use. The other two books to be released next week are Haudkil and Somaliyak versions of a previously released book about learning colors and Tlingit. The new books will be distributed to families enrolled in the Baby Raven Reads program. They'll also be available to purchase at the Institute's online store. To date, the Baby Raven Reads program has published 25 books. The program promotes literacy, language, and school readiness for preschool-aged children. It began in Juneau in 2015 and has expanded to other Southeast communities. The new books will be released during the December 6th Gallery Walk in Juneau. Sea Alaska Heritage will also host a Baby Raven Reads event open to the public that night. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea. And down in Washington State, the Seattle City Council is proceeding with a new tax on Uber and Lyft rides, pitched by Mayor Jenny Durkan to help pay for affordable housing, delayed downtown streetcar, and give new support to ride-hailing drivers. Seattle Times reports council members unanimously approved a 57-cent tax on Monday. Durkan and the council have also promised to ensure Uber and Lyft drivers make Seattle's $16 minimum wage starting next summer, but the city first plans to study driver pay. And finally, let's take a look at the National Weather Service forecast. Current conditions at Juneau International Airport, a few clouds, 28 degrees. In the borough of Northern Admiralty Island tonight, clear, lows around 20. Wednesday, mostly clear, highs around 30. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, November 26th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.